Welcome back to another episode of Secrets in Nature. My name is Lexi, and we have a very special interview today. I'm very excited to get into it. But first, the new segment that I started a few weeks ago. Every episode, even if it's not a solo episode, I just like to take a minute and talk about the ways that I have been supporting my menstrual cycle, the things that I have been doing just to kind of align with my menstrual cycle. I like to share just like the little things that I've been doing because it kind of reinforces to myself that the efforts that I'm putting in are not for nothing. I think like one of my biggest mental battles with everything that I do, and I've been like this for so long, is just that like I'm constantly feeling like I'm putting in all this effort for nothing. And I know that that's not true. I know that everything I'm doing is for a reason, does make a difference in my life, even if it's a small difference, it's making a difference. So I like to reinforce it to myself. I like to kind of recap for myself all the ways that I've shown up for myself in the past week because it feels really good. And I also want to do it just to share what I've been doing so that anyone that might be listening can take inspiration from it. And even if you're not going to use it yourself, I always say, tell someone you love. I don't know. I'm trying to like normalize this. Like I'm trying to normalize literally living and breathing for my cycle because I don't know. I feel like we're supposed to be doing that. We always should have been doing that. And I have a lot of catching up to do. If you haven't listened to my episode, it's called Life After 10 Years of Birth Control. It's by far my favorite podcast episode I have ever posted. Don't tell Rachel, my favorite Secrets in Nature episode of all time. It's just something I'm really proud of. Going off of birth control, I've made it my whole personality. Like, quite frankly, it's made me insufferable as a person. Like, everyone's tired of hearing about it. I don't care. I'm going to keep talking about it. I want to normalize it. And I want to normalize everything I've been doing. I want it to become second nature. I want to be able to get to the point where it's like, it doesn't feel like a chore. It doesn't feel like a learning curve. Like, I know it's okay to be like learning as I go. Like, that's how life is, and I'm loving the learning process, but I just want to get to the point where it's just like kind of ingrained in me and it's just how I live my life. I kind of am getting to that point, honestly, but talking about it does help. So here we go. We're in our luteal phase, and the luteal phase is luteal phasing. Chores, like household chores, just hit different when you're in this phase, okay? Because your body wants to nest, like it wants to get the house ready. We're programmed to want to like get our living space ready to bleed because we know that that is going to like take us out for a week. It really does feel so good to do household chores, organize and clean up. I changed the sheets today. I organized the whole house. I got some new decorations recently that my mom got for me at a thrift store, and I found places for all of that, like, and it just felt really good. Like, I was just like on fire this morning doing all of that. Also, I just want to say I was ovulating this time last week and it worked out so perfectly. I had multiple social events. I had a wedding, I had an engagement party, and I was so here for it. I was feeling cute, I was charismatic. It was just like the perfect time to be doing those things. And obviously life doesn't always work like that. Like, the weddings come when they come. I've said before, the podcast interviews come when they come. Like, you can't control it all the time, you know? So when things just like work out like that, it's really nice. Also, I just want to share like kind of a realization I had recently. And when I say recently, I mean literally 10 minutes ago because I was journaling and this kind of came up and I put it to the test. But basically, my three main forms of exercise are weightlifting, yoga, and walking. And all three of those things are very like, I don't know, what's the word I'm looking for? All three of them are very like masculine side of things, very straight. That's definitely not the right word. Like, your body is just kind of in the form that it needs to be in. And that's that. I don't really know what the word I'm looking for is, but like, they're just very specific motions that you're doing. but that doesn't really leave a lot of room for like feminine movements, like shaking and dancing. And like, I feel like that is a miss for me. Like, I need more of those kind of movements in my life. So I was journaling on this. It kind of occurred to me, like, I feel like my body is just craving more breath work and more dance. And like, I stopped journaling. I started stretching. I just kind of like let my body hang, like ragdoll hang, stretch type deal. And I just kind of did some swaying and like some shaking, and I let my limbs kind of flop around. And like, I could tell that was what my body was craving. Like, I didn't want to stop doing it. Like, it just felt so good. And since the follicular phase and the ovulation phase is like, those phases are so good for weightlifting and hitting PRs and doing the things that require the most energy, the luteal phase is the best time to be doing things like that. Like, really just like slowing down and doing more like self-care, checking in with your body, like those types of things. So good for the luteal phase. And while I'm at it, if anyone has any tips for me, I'm still trying to like figure out what the best way to go about weightlifting is in terms of like cycle syncing. It's tricky because obviously every time I go to the gym, I want to be getting stronger and I want to be increasing the weight. And obviously not all phases of the cycle are meant for let's lift more weight than we did last week. So I'm still kind of like navigating it. Lifting in my luteal phase still feels pretty good. I've already said I don't go to the gym on my period. I like can't even fathom doing that. I don't know how some women do it. I feel like I deserve a medal. I feel like I deserve a gold medal for going to work on my period. I don't know how women go to the gym and do hip thrusts. Like, I just do not understand. I don't know. I'm still kind of figuring the weightlifting part of it out. But what I'm doing right now, it feels okay. So I'm gonna keep doing it. Moral of the story, chores around the house, they are hitting different when you're in the luteal phase. More feminine movements in the body. Your body is probably craving it after being the strongest, most outgoing, masculine version. I just feel like the follicular phase and ovulation, like as sexy as you feel when you're ovulating, like that's like the more masculine side of your cycle because you are feeling so much more outgoing and you want to lift the heavy weights and you want to be doing all the things. So the luteal phase and the menstrual phase are the time to be a freaking woman, be in your feminine, and I just feel like the balance, I've said it once and I'll say it again, there is built-in balance in your body. Your body has innate balance built right into it. So when you tap into it, it's inevitable that it reflects in your outer world. Okay, the fantastic interview that I have for you today was inspired when I watched The Business of Being Born, which is a documentary. It was made by Ricky Lake and Abby Epstein. They also have another documentary called The Business of Birth Control. Both of them are available on their website, but they did a free screening of both this year on two separate occasions. They did a free screening of The Business of Birth Control for International Women's Day, I think, and I watched it. I loved it so much. And then they did a free screening of The Business of Being Born for Mother's Day. So I watched that. And The Business of Being Born completely changed my perspective around giving birth. It kind of just went from this like crippling fear that I always had. Like, I've always been so terrified to be pregnant and give birth in a hospital. Like, it was just the most terrifying thing to me. So it kind of just went from like this fear that I knew I would like one day have to overcome if I wanted to have kids. And it changed to like, dare I say, something that I almost kind of look forward to now because I realized how special it could be. And I realized it didn't have to look like what I always thought it had to look like. Like, hospitals just give me so much anxiety, and they always have. Luckily, I have yet to be a patient myself in the hospital, but I do genuinely think that the hospital aspect of giving birth was where 75% of my fear was actually coming from. And you'll hear later in the interview, Sam Magpie, who is a midwife, she had such a great point in our interview that our bodies do kind of go into fight or flight when we're put into situations like that. So the comfort of being in your own home when you're giving birth, like, it may not seem like it would make that much of a difference, but it's truly a world of difference. So after watching The Business of Being Born, I knew I wanted to have a midwife on the podcast. And Laura, who is the owner of Root and Restore in New Jersey, I've had her on the podcast podcast previously as well, but I knew that her sister had recently given birth and I knew that she used the midwife. I knew that she did it at home. So I reached out to Laura and I asked her what midwife they used. She sent me Sam's info and here we are. Sam does go into a little bit more detail in the interview about her background and why she decided to get into midwifery. But there's one thing that I want to point out before the interview starts. I went into this interview thinking that I had such good questions. Like, I thought I was going to be so thorough. Like, wow, I just watched a documentary. Like, look how educated I am. Like, I know the perfect questions to ask. And I thought, like, it would just be a great interview, you know? And I ended up being like almost embarrassed during the interview because I said something along the lines of, wow, Sam, like you're around for the best moments of these people's lives. Like, how does that feel? And she had to remind me, like, yeah, I am, but I'm also there for the lowest point in their lives sometimes. And like, I was embarrassed. I went into it with a much simpler mindset, not really considering the complexity of it all. I just kind of like wanted to talk about the magic of a home birth, like, wow, how great that these women have these amazing experiences. I just like had all of this excitement, having never thought or really even heard about home births ever in my life until very recently. And now I kind of was like open to this world and I was just kind of ready to talk about the positives of it, not really like having the awareness about the very difficult parts. I guess I kind of had to have some awareness to a degree, but there was definitely a shred of ignorance and I was forgetting the very obvious complicated nature of it and the awful situations there will be with the topic of birth. And that's any birth, by the way. Home birth, hospital birth, each situation is so unique. And in this interview, we really talk about the highs and the lows equally of the birthing process. I also asked Sam how many kids she had. And in the same sentence, I asked how many times she had given birth, like equating them to mean the same thing, which I realized could have been very insensitive depending on who I was asking. So I hope you learned something new from this interview. I obviously did. At the end, I told Sam that I had no plans to like become a mother anytime soon, but you know, maybe in 5 years I would hit her up. She was very sweet, very easy to talk to. She beautifully talked about the importance of having an emotional relationship with her patients, both because she is there to witness and assist them in their most vulnerable state, but also because having a level of trust with your patient as a midwife before going into the situation of a home birth is so necessary. We talk about what home births look like and how being in the setting of your own home, in addition to having free range to move intuitively and actively, can contribute to an easier and more intimate experience. And I do think this is a very serious topic, so I'm happy that I was able to kind of transition just from the, oh, a home birth looks great, let's interview a midwife, to just having a deeper understanding of what it means to be with someone, whether they're experiencing the highest of highs or lowest of lows. This really is a good one, so I really hope you enjoy it. And if you haven't, I highly recommend watching The Business of Being Born. I will include a link to watch it online in the show notes, along with all of Sam's info. Again, my name is Lexi. This is Secrets in Nature, the podcast where we talk all about the ways that humans affect nature and nature affects humans. Please follow me on Instagram at Secrets in Nature Podcast. If you like this episode, please share it. Please send it to somebody. Please write me a review on Apple Podcasts. It would be so appreciated. I hope you are having a beautiful day or night wherever you are in the world. And let's get into the interview. This is Secrets About Home Births with midwife Sam Magpie. Welcome, Sam Magpie, to Secrets in Nature. I am so happy to have you here. In a nutshell, this past spring, I watched The Business of Being Born because they did like a free screening for Mother's Day. And awesome. It changed my perspective on giving birth in so many ways. And I knew that I needed to have a midwife on the podcast because I wanted someone to share these types of stories, because the documentary like absolutely blew me away. Yet home births are still something that people have a lot of opinions about. Maybe it scares them. Maybe they have a lot of questions. And it's so crazy because like that's literally how we did it for all of human history up until like the last 100 years or so. So we'll unpack all of that later in the interview for sure. But for now, please introduce yourself. Please tell us about your business.
Yeah, definitely. My name's Sam. I am going on my fifth year in private practice as a home birth midwife in the Philadelphia area. So I'm a solo practitioner, and then I have, you know, some other midwives that I work closely with, and I have some really lovely assistants that help my practice out. And yeah, I've been, you know, in the birth field for the last 10 years. So I started as a birth doula, you know, attending births in the hospitals and birth centers. And yeah, after I saw my first home birth, I was just like, oh, that is what I was put on the planet to do. So I, you know, I quickly, you know, looked up how to become a midwife, and it was not a very clear answer at all. And luckily I found my way and yeah, started my practice 5 years ago.
So my next question was going to be, what inspired you to take this path? But you already said you saw a home birth. So
I mean, the path really started when I became a doula more so than prior to seeing my first home birth. So after I graduated from high school, you know, I didn't really know what I wanted to do, but, you know, I was interested in the medical field. So I was like, you know, let me go to my local community college and start like, you know, doing the prerequisites for nursing school. And, you know, it was, I think it was like my freshman year of college, my uncle's like very hippie neighbor came over, and she was just like, you should look into being a doula or a midwife. Like, I totally see you doing something like that. And I was like, okay, lady. And, you know, she was talking about home births and, you know, babies being born in tubs. And I mean, it all was very foreign to me. And I was just like, okay, whatever. But anyway, I went home later and I like looked up what a doula was and what a midwife was. And I was like, oh, this sounds kind of cool. Like, I had started dabbling in like, you know, natural and alternative medicine, and, you know, kind of was up that alley. So I was like, I'm going to check this out. And I found a doula training that was happening the next month in Philly. So I signed up, and it, like, you know, similar to what you said about the business being born, like, it just like was like a light bulb immediately went off. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, why has birth never been talked about in this way? Like, it was, you know, I just felt like, you know, you learned about things in health class and, you know, stories from family members and whoever about giving birth, but like nothing even remotely came close to what I learned in like one weekend. And immediately I was addicted to everything that had to do with birth. So I was lucky enough to have an old friend of mine who was pregnant. And I was like, hey, I just trained as a doula. Can I attend your birth? He's like, yeah, sure. So I attended her birth as her doula in the hospital. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. And so, you know, I started doing births in the hospital, and, you know, about a year or two in, I saw my first home birth. And yeah, after that, I was like, oh my gosh, like I already loved birth and thought it was incredible. And then I saw how hands-off it could be and just how normal it could be. And I was just like, that is incredible. Like, I need to do that.
That's amazing. So for someone that might not know, because even I think I have an idea, but I would love like your definitions. What is the difference between a midwife and a doula?
Yeah, so a midwife is someone who is trained to, you know, be the primary caretaker of, you know, a pregnant person and a baby. So, you know, I'm monitoring mom's overall well-being during their pregnancy. And, you know, the more clinical side of things, as like, as opposed to like helping assist a birth. And so a doula is there more so for emotional, like physical support during labor. You know, we both work really well together. It's just like, I'm the one helping deliver the baby, and the doula is the one that's there to more so help with emotional and physical support.
So it's more just like the actual delivering of the baby versus more emotional kind of support.
Right. Like myself, I'm there to make sure that, you know, mom and baby are doing okay. And the doula is there to like hold space and, you know, just be there as a presence of support.
Gotcha. So as the midwife, do you bring supplies and equipment that's a little bit different and a little bit more medical related than a doula?
Yeah, exactly. So we're trained how to resuscitate a baby. You know, in certain states, you know, midwives are able to carry medications in case of a hemorrhage. So yeah, it's the more medical side of.
Gotcha. So I'm so sorry if you already answered this, but when you became a midwife, what did that like training look like and how long was it?
Yeah, so that's a good question. For me, the training was like 4 years. But that is actually pretty short in comparison to a lot of other people. So in the US, there's three types of midwives, and in no other country is it this all over the place and backwards. But in the US, there's certified nurse midwives, which you'll see those, like, you know, they often work in OBGYN offices or in the hospitals. They are nurses that then go on to a master's level program and get a, they become certified nurse midwives. And so they are able to work in the hospital, in birth centers, and some of them practice at home. Then you have certified professional midwives. They're people that go just directly into midwifery school, and they come out and they pretty much only do home birth and birth center in some states. So they're trained in completely in out-of-hospital birth. And then you have certified midwives, which I don't know much about their training. They're only legal in a very few states, but it's somewhere in between a nurse midwife and a certified professional midwife. Like, they're not nurses, but they do go into a master's level program for midwifery. Some states let them practice in the hospital. So actually, there's almost like four types of midwives here. So, and then there's also traditional midwives. And so these are people that are traditionally trained all through apprenticeship level. Some of them seek out, like, you know, unaccredited schools. And typically, like, traditional midwives were people that might not have been credentialed, but still had a ton of experience. And now, especially after COVID, there's been a rise in people calling themselves traditional midwives, but who actually have no experience at all. And it's actually led to a lot. What I'd like to say is, like, avoidable mortalities that happened in the home birth community, unfortunately. So yeah, there's a lot going on in the climate of midwifery in the US. But to answer your question, I went to direct entry midwifery school to get my CPM, actually ended up not getting my CPM and practicing as a traditional midwife currently, which I still, you know, toy around with getting, you know, going through the certification process. But in the state that I work in, Pennsylvania, there is no licensure for certified professional midwives. So there hasn't really been a need for me to go and do that.
Right. It makes me so mad. Like, it makes my blood boil. The scene in The Business of Being Born, I'm not sure which decade it was, but they wanted to, like, put up all this propaganda against home births, and they would, like, put photos up of, like, old women saying, like, do you want this woman to be the person that helps you with your birth instead of, like, a doctor? And it makes me so mad because it's just, like, just blatant misogyny. So when you were talking about births and how you witnessed a home birth and you saw how your words were, like, hands off it could be, because when you think of a hospital birth, it's very hands on. Like, it looks very much the same for almost every birth, and yeah, I mean, very hands on.
Individualized care in the hospital, typically, like, you know, it's just like they have their routine and this is what they do. They get the mom on her back, put her legs up, coach her how to push, you know, massage her perineum to help it stretch. I'm doing quotes for help. But yeah, I mean, it's like this orchestrated event. Whereas then when I saw home birth, it was just like they were monitoring the baby really unintrusively. And the mom was doing all the work. Like, this, there wasn't stuff being done to her. She was clearly the one in all of the power. Everybody else was just kind of holding space around her and making sure that everything was safe. And I was just like, wow, like, that is amazing. That is what it should be.
So I've never witnessed a home birth myself. I've only seen what I saw in the documentary. So for someone that has no idea what to even visualize, what does it typically look like? What positions have you seen mothers take? Paint us a picture.
Yeah. I mean, it looks so different for everybody. And, you know, that's part of what I love about the job is I never know what to expect. But yeah, I mean, typically, you know, you're coming into a home. And so let's say, you know, it's a first time mom. She's generally, like, laboring really beautifully, just breathing through contractions, because, you know, part of prenatal care as a home birth midwife is, like, really preparing them for what a natural birth will feel like and look like. And, you know, nobody really knows what to expect, but if you have the education, you know how to manage the pain. I think a lot of people think, like, you know, you're in labor, you're screaming, you're in intolerable amounts of pain. But when you're in an environment where you're supported and you feel safe, which is typically your home, you know, that fight or flight response is not necessarily there, because you're just, like, you're comfortable. So, you know, oftentimes they have a doula and they're swaying, they're moving around, they're sitting on the birth ball, they're going up and down the stairs, they're, you know, maybe sitting on the toilets, like squatting in a birth tub. And so, yeah, I mean, there's tons of position changes. You know, there's typically home births are a lot shorter than hospital births. I noticed, you know, as a doula, like, people would be in this great flow of labor and then go to the hospital, and then their contractions would slow down, and you know, their body would tense up even if they weren't realizing it. And you know, it would just, things would slow down, and then they would get, you know, Pitocin to speed their contractions up, and they'd need an epidural because those contractions are so terrible. And you know, it turned into a whole thing. Whereas at home, like, you really do see a difference. Like, yeah, people are just comfortable, and their body does what it's meant to do when it's comfortable. And when it's not, you see that too. Like, if there's people that have a history of trauma, or you know, might not feel safe in their bodies, like, that stuff comes out during labor, and you know, you see a whole, like, you just learn to read people and their bodies really well.
So I think that's so fascinating because I was going to ask why go up and down the stairs, but is it just like to keep moving and not be like stationary?
Yeah, I mean, it's in, when you're in active labor, you know, you want to keep active, basically. I mean, like, just think of like gravity. You want baby to drop down in the pelvis and come out. So, you know, moving your hips around, doing the stairs, all of those things help get baby into a position and work them into your pelvis to get baby out. Whereas in hospital, you're kind of just standing there. You know, sometimes they'll be like, you could walk the hall, or you know, whatever, but they're not really encouraging you to do different positions or saying, hey, your baby's really on the left-hand side, like, you know, in a certain position, like, let's encourage you to sit on the toilet or lean forward or lean back to really engage them in your pelvis more. Whereas at home, we're trained, like, you know, we're trained in that, and the doulas are typically trained in that too. You know, we're supporting people to like optimize the process.
Right. I have a lot to say about like the hospital versus at home births and how all the ways that like hospital births might actively be working against the process. So we'll talk about that in a second. But you did mention that I was going to ask you how long the average home birth was because I didn't know if it was the same amount of time on average as a hospital birth. So how long on average would you say a home birth is?
Yeah, I mean, that's like such a varied question, but I'd say, like, you know, when I was attending birth as a doula in the hospital with first time moms that were, you know, low risk, you know, you're looking at 24 plus hours. No, it was rare that I saw a mom just like go in and deliver pretty quickly. Whereas, you know, home birth, first time moms, it's 24 hours or less.
Gotcha. So do you only do local births or like how far have you traveled for a birth?
Yeah, I mean, I typically stay local. I like to be within like 45 minutes of where I live. But I've traveled, you know, further, and you know, I have clients that move away, and they're like, okay, like, I'm gonna hire you to come, you know, catch my next baby in Colorado or Utah or Florida, and I'm totally down for that to travel. So I was happy to travel for clients if I'm able to.
That's really cool. Honestly, like you talk about this and I'm like, I want to be a midwife. Like, do I actually? I don't know if I could handle it, but it just seems like the most fulfilling job. Like you get to witness like the most special moments of these people's lives every time you go to work.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's definitely a lot of highs, and that's obviously what keeps me doing this. But you know, with midwifery, there's also a, like, you're a part of people's lives for the highest of highs and lowest of lows. So, you know, you're also for people with loss or who have, you know, terminal diagnosis for their baby, and you know, there's just like a lot of trauma that people unpack when they're pregnant, and you know, that can also be a lot.
Right, of course. I want to ask you this. I hope you don't take it the wrong way. Have you
Yeah, no, you're
ever
fine.
had like one of those really awful situations where there was loss involved and had someone like try to hold you personally accountable?
No, so I actually had my first loss this year, unfortunately. And, you know, I'm really close with that client, and we keep in touch, and I think we have a really beautiful relationship together, which I'm super grateful for, because I know a lot of other midwives, don't necessarily have that relationship with clients who they might have like had, you know, traumatic experiences with. I think one thing that's really important about midwifery care, and you know, something that like I really pride myself on in my practice, is I really am selective about who I work with. And so I need to feel like I can trust my clients as much as they trust me. And yeah, I mean, I think that just like having, you know, communication and like really informing people about their decision making makes a huge difference. Whereas in the hospital, like, if there's a loss, like, you're likely never going to see that doctor again. They're not going to process that loss with
Right.
you. You know, it's just kind of like, this happened and good luck. Here's some bereavement like resources. Whereas, you know, the loss that I experienced in my practice this year, you know, we were really able to process a lot of it together, which I think was helpful for both of us. And it still was like really horrible, but, you know, just feeling like, you know, we had like a really strong sense of community, and she had a lot of support from her church. And, you know, loss can be tragic and like totally traumatizing, but it can also be really beautiful to see a community come together, because sometimes loss is inevitable. And so, yeah, I think that like where you're at working with somebody is everything. And so I don't know if you just saw, but there was a baby that died in the hospital recently, and like the baby was decapitated. Like, this is all news that literally just came out today. And the way that was handled was really poorly. Like, the hospital staff like covered the death up, wouldn't let the mom see the baby or hold the baby afterwards, like did not explain that they decapitated her baby during delivery. And I mean, I think I obviously the fact that the baby died and the situation itself is like obviously so tragic. And like, I would have some say for the doctor, because, you know, I imagine that she did everything she could to get this baby out. But what I don't, the part that like loses me is the fact that they tried to cover this up and not even give the mom any, you know, talk to her about what happened or give her the space to hold her baby or anything afterwards. And that's what I think, that's where the hospital system goes wrong. And I think that's oftentimes why they are in lawsuits with people who have traumatic births, because they don't hold space for them emotionally afterwards.
Right. I'm so sorry to hear about the loss that you had this year, you said.
Yeah. So this is I'm going into my fifth year of practice now.
Wow.
And yeah, I mean, statistically, it's like midwives typically have at least one loss, you know, in their entire career. And I, you know, hope that I never have through that again. But
another one, yeah.
You know, one of the midwives that trained me, she had been in practice for, you know, nearly like 40 years, and she, you know, had one loss in that 40 years. Like,
wow.
You know,
so I mean, one loss too many, but
right.
But
and I mean, it happens. And honestly, like statistically, like loss can happen outside of the hospital, like for infants, more frequently, but I mean, it's still a very low percentage. And the thing that sucks with home birth is like, nobody's really out there getting good data on like the safety of it. So it's hard to provide people with facts sometimes. Like, there are facts, there are statistics, but it's like the research that's done is not always great quality. So it's like, you know, you kind of just have to provide your own statistics for people, or, you know, the little info that we do kind of have.
And I love that you mentioned just the fact that your emotional relationship to your clients, like, it just seems so different. Cause if I go to the hospital and I give birth, like, as you said, everything is very much being done to me and it is what it is. And they see the same thing every day. But when you're coming into somebody's home and you're seeing them like doing the act of birth and doing what feels intuitive and moving around the house and being held by their partner, like, it just all seems so much more like that emotional element is so needed. So I'm so happy that you brought that up.
Yeah, I mean, it's so much more intimate than like, you know, in the hospital, you're seeing things all the time. You see demise all the time. You see, you know, you see tragic stuff all the time. So you kind of become desensitized to it, you know, whereas like I'm laid up in these people's bed, like I'm snuggling on their couch with their dog. It's like I'm a part of their family and I consider my clients a part of my family as well. So it's much more intimate and it's like you feel that so much more, you know what I mean?
I would imagine that you're like moving around the house, like, you know where things are, you know where towels are, you know where like the glasses are, the water is, like, you just need to be able to move around the house and like do what you have to do and tend to the woman as you need to.
Right.
That's so interesting. So I wanted to talk a little bit more about just like the differences between hospital births and home births and the ways that hospital births could be actively working against the process. And it's crazy because like hospitals in general just like really cause me a lot of stress. Just to like think about being in hospitals makes me very anxious, even if I'm just like visiting a relative.
Right.
But the business of being born made birth go from like a super terrifying thing in my head to this thing that could now potentially be an experience that is 100% my own, where I'm in control, I'm doing it how it was meant to be done, I'm in the most comfortable place in the world, my own home. And it just totally shifted my perspective on what it could look like. And like up until then, it was truly something that like I wanted no part of. And now
yeah,
it's suddenly
I feel the same way. Like, got into it, I was just like, if I ever have to give birth, like, signed me up for a C-section. Like
Like in and out, like I don't want any part of it.
And then, once I did my doula training and watched The Business of Being Born, I was just like, oh wow, it can be this beautiful experience. And then when I finally saw it, like in person, I was like, oh, holy shit. Like, yeah, that is incredible. And that is, everybody should have that experience. And so, yeah, I mean, the hospital, like I said, is just this place where they have a routine and that's what they do. And they want the babies to come out a certain amount of time. And they have their hands tied with like hospital policy too. And so, hospital policy is not individualized care, it's not what's best for mom and baby always. So, you see a lot of things that like don't have to happen. And, oftentimes people don't know how to advocate for themselves. And we've been in this system so long that it's like the practitioners, the nurses, the doctors, the nurse midwives, they're all kind of just going apart with how they've been doing it for forever. And so we're not necessarily statistically improving outcomes at all. Like, where people are like, we have all this technology, yada, yada, but it's like, we're not improving maternal outcomes. We're not improving infant outcomes. Like, our infant and maternal mortality rates are the highest in the world almost. So it's, yeah,
It's
we're.
like, where's the happy medium though? Like, it's like, why
Yeah.
can't
I
you
mean, I
have the
think in it.
emotional support and then also the technology? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, the technology is actually like, that's the part that's harming us, is like, we're reliant on technology. Whereas like, we've forgot to like how to use our hands and our ears. And like, yeah, it's kind of just become a backwards system. And yeah, it's unfortunate. I mean, I think in an ideal world, like having, well-trained midwives, like that's the norm. In other countries, European countries, like they have midwives. That's who people see, especially low-risk women. That's just the norm. You see a midwife and you don't see an OB unless something is wrong. And so in our country, that's not the norm. It's like everybody sees an OB. Some people see midwives. We don't have enough midwives. We have a shortage of healthcare providers, nurses, midwives, doctors across the board. So, it's not necessarily the fault of the practitioners. It's like our system is just so screwed.
I mean, I love that. I love your point that it's the technology that could be harming us because we are forgetting how to use like common sense and our intuition and follow what feels right and use our hands and our ears, like you said. So I guess just where's the balance between that and then of course the use of technology when it's absolutely necessary. Of course, we're in no way speaking against hospitals. Like it's so important and amazing that we have them. And I'm sure there are cases where someone might even intend to have a home birth but needs to go to the hospital because of a complication. Like I know at the end of that
Right.
documentary, the filmmaker herself had to be like rushed to the hospital in the end because of an emergency. But like that's the beauty of it, right? Like it's the element of the option that is so appealing to me. And also the fact that we live in a time where we even have the option, you know?
And there's hospitals in the area, like Jefferson Hospital. They are incredible. They've been doing such great collaborative work with the home birth midwives to like really optimize, transfer. So, clients that need to transfer, they're, treating them with dignity and respect, and like, oh, we know that you wanted a home birth. We're going to try our best to get you a natural vaginal birth and like get, support you in all the ways that we can in the hospital. And I mean, that is amazing. But like, why isn't everybody doing that work? It's
Right.
like, that's like rare. It's like, wait, that's like the rare thing. And so, I'm so grateful for their support, and they have been really incredible to myself, my clients, the community, and it makes a huge difference, but that's unfortunately not the norm. And so slowly but surely, you have to work at each hospital and say like, I'm a home birth provider, this is what I do. And so, you're kind of like, you have the cards stacked against you, and it takes some time, but I'm hoping that, little by little we can, work on each hospital and.
No, but yeah, it's just crazy to think that like the hospital aspect of giving birth made it that much scarier for me. Like I used to think like, oh yeah, maybe I want kids, but I'm gonna have to like get over my crippling fear of giving birth in a hospital in order to do so. Like I'm happy that I don't have to think of it that way anymore. And I'm sure like women listening might be like lining up to say to me like, okay, yeah, Lexi, like you say that you want a home birth until you feel the first bit of pain and then you'll be begging for the epidural. But as we kind of talked about earlier, it's so interesting because the documentary addresses how, like, number one, the position that you're put in during a hospital birth is very unnatural and it makes it harder for the baby to come out. You don't have the element of activity like you would in your own home. And you also
Right.
mentioned, I was going to bring this up and you mentioned it on your own, like how the different drugs that you're given in a hospital birth, like they respond to each other and kind of work against each other, therefore making it a more difficult experience. So like I was gathering that many aspects of a hospital birth could only be like adding to the pain to begin with. So what
Right.
do you have any more thoughts on that? Just like, it, do you think it's less painful at home to a degree?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. Again, back to that like education aspect, like when you know what's happening to your body and you know like the tool, like you're taught the tools and you're practicing breathing exercises and things like months and months in advance, like it really makes a difference as opposed to like, all right, now you're in the sterile environment that you're not comfortable with, like that your body does go into fight or flight and that just makes it more painful. Like your body can't deal with the
I go
contractions.
into fight or
And I'm
flight
not
just
to say
visiting
that.
someone at the hospital.
Right. So imagine like going through this, like, yeah, birth, it can be painful, but if you know what type of pain that is, it's not like a you stubbed your toe pain. It's, you know, it's a totally
Of
different
course.
thing. So I always was like, oh, I can't deal with pain. I don't do well with pain. And like when I was giving birth, especially with, for the first time, I was just like, I would never, I remember like looking at my doula and I was like, I would never want to be numb for this. Like I feel so in tune with my body. And my second birth, I did not feel that way. I was like, oh my gosh, I absolutely know why people get epidurals. But even still, like it's nothing that your body can't handle because it is your body. Like your body is doing work, and that's really what women have to wrap their head around. And so we've been taught like, okay, you numb everything. Like, all right, you have your period cramps, take Tylenol for that to numb the pain for that. You have depression, you take a pill for that. Like everything we want to numb, we don't want to feel anything. And so yeah, I mean, birth just go like it's like, all right, you're having contractions, get an epidural. And so people don't often realize the risk. It's like, oh, I had this happen because thank God I was in the hospital. And it's like, oh, you kind of you might have had that because of all the things that happened, like because you had an epidural, because you had Pitocin. You know, people often don't know the risks that come at hand with these things. They're just like, oh, everybody gets an epidural, it's going to be fine, not knowing like, oh, there's tons of risk that can be involved with that long term.
Are you familiar with like, 'cause I don't want to misspeak, but I know in the documentary they were talking about how like Pitocin and the epidural, how they work against each other. Like one of them like speeds up the contractions and the other one like slows them back down. I don't want to misspeak. Do you know what like the actual like situation is there with how they work against each other?
Yeah, I mean, essentially, yeah, exactly what you're saying. Like labor, like epidurals aren't meant to slow down labor, but they can slow down labor. They let, you know, and Pitocin is meant to like speed contractions up, but it makes things a lot more painful. So then typically people get the epidural, but since their body can't feel anything, they're not moving around, like
Yeah.
it often does slow down your labor. So then they bump the Pitocin up, and then, you know, baby might get stressed out because now are these like really intense contractions that are not natural, and baby can't tolerate it. And then it's like, oh, you need a C-section, or oh, it's been too long, you're not dilating, now you need a C-section. And it was, and people like are just like, oh, like my baby just wouldn't come out, or you know, my baby couldn't tolerate labor, like whatever it is. But I mean, our C-section rate is so ridiculously high, and I'm so grateful for when, you know, we do need to go in for a C-section and it's valid, but there's our C-section rate is like ridiculously higher than any other country. And it's clear to me as to why. It's not like, oh my gosh, I wonder why our C-section rate's so high. It's like, no, it's very clear as to why our C-section rate is so high.
Well, also, wasn't there like a huge like there was like a moment in time, like I don't know if it was like the early 2000s where like C-sections just became like trendy, like it wasn't even necessary by any
Right.
means. Like it was just trendy to like schedule what day you were having birth and like all the celebrities were doing it and everything. Like I think that's so crazy. Oh, my, I actually wanted to ask, have you ever had like clients where the mom really wanted a home birth and her like significant other didn't, or like vice versa?
Yeah, all the
Like,
time.
do you have to like side with one of them or and like kind
I
of
mean,
like talk?
I really, again, like back to that whole thing of like, I really need to feel comfortable with the family. So, I mean, if it's a situation where dad's like, I'm not totally on board with this, but like, I'm going to support my wife, like, oftentimes in those situations, like they come around and they're like, oh my gosh, that was the best thing ever. Like, I'm going to tell all of my friends about this. Like, I can't believe I was ever like against the home birth. But if it's somebody that like really is adamantly against having a home birth and not about it, like I often don't feel comfortable working with those clients because I'm like, if anything were to happen, like I can't trust, like, you know what I mean? There has to be a level of trust mutually between all of us. And I feel like everybody needs to be somewhat on board. So like a partner might not be totally supportive, but like, or, you know, might not be totally sold on the idea of a home birth, but is willing to support their partner because ultimately they're the one going through the birth. And that's ultimately where I need clients to be in order to take them on.
Have you ever had like maybe the couple was totally like on board with the home birth, but they were getting a lot of pressure from like their families not to go through with it?
Yeah, I mean, that's like 75% of my clients.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So what do you just kind of offer them like advice in terms of like, here's how you can approach it? Like, how do you, or do you just kind of stay out of that entirely?
Yeah, I mean, again, I was 21 when I got pregnant with my first, and like everybody was against me doing a home birth. And it's just like, you have to really know why you're choosing a home birth. Because if something does go wrong, and I'm not saying like, oh, babe dies, but like if you need to transfer, if you know anything go, like it's like, oh, well, see, we told you shouldn't have a home birth. So you really have to understand why you want a home birth, like what the safety of it is, why you might transfer, and like really have a good idea of that. And you know, I have people that are like so gung-ho about home birth, and I'm like, you also have to be like fine with that you might transfer. And like, so you ultimately have to be the one that either educates people or you don't talk about it with people. Because for me, it was just like, all right, I'll try and educate my, you know, family on this, but it's like, we're not going to get anywhere. So then you just hit a point where you're like, I'm done with this. Whereas, you know, it depends on your personality. You know, some people like want to continuously educate and their family's receptive to it, or sometimes there's not. I have a client recently that hired me, and you know, her husband comes from a very like medical family. Her husband's dad is a surgeon and the mom is a nurse. And so, you know, they were like very not on board with her having a home birth and, you know, whatever. And she was like, can I bring my mother-in-law to an appointment? And so sometimes this goes really poorly where it's like, they're kind of like coming at you with questions, trying to like catch you off guard and see what you're about. And it just feels kind of like interrogative, which is like not what I want to do, obviously. Or it's like they respond really well and they're like, oh, actually, like this is not what I thought it was at all. Like, obviously, this person is well qualified and I'm sorry for like doubting your, you know, decision to birth at home. So anyway, this client came with her mother-in-law, and like literally within 5 minutes of the appointment, she was just like, I just want to be honest, like I was really skeptical, but within just a few minutes of meeting you, like I trust you. I think you're going to do great. You seem awesome. Like, you know, she just went on and on about how she was actually happy that her daughter-in-law is choosing to give birth at home. And so, yeah.
That's great. But I feel like just like with anything in life, right? Like if you're very confident in your why, it's that much harder for like anyone else's opinions to get in the way of that. Like if you're confident, right. Exactly. just like you said, you know your why, that's really all that matters.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's in any decision you make in parenting, like people are going to be like, well, I didn't do that with my baby, or I don't recommend this, or, you know, whatever it is. And so, yeah, no matter what, you have to be confident in your decisions, no matter what it is, home birth, you know, how you choose to educate your kids, homeschool, public school, private, like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
at the
yeah,
end of the day,
sure.
Really, it's nobody's business, but you're going to come up with like family members that have something to say about everything that you do. And so you have to be really solid in your choices and your why. Yeah.
So you mentioned earlier, like low risk versus high risk patients. So have you ever had like a client that was, or I keep saying client, would it be like a patient? I don't know. I'm sorry. Have you ever had like a high risk person that you kind of had to encourage from the start? Like you just should probably do this in a hospital, or do you always give it like a fair shot and transfer if necessary?
Somebody high risk, like depending on why they're high risk, like, you know, the hospital will say like, oh, you're 41, you're high risk, but it's like, that's not necessarily high risk. You know, if somebody has hypertension or like a medical condition that they should not be giving birth at home with, then I'll sometimes do co-care and say like, yeah, you need to give birth in the hospital, but you know, I'm happy to do like prenatal care for you at home and postpartum care. So that they're still getting kind of the best of both worlds. Like I'm seeing them for appointments, so they're getting that holistic side of care, but they're also planning to give birth in the hospital. But yeah, I mean, typically, like, again, like I do a lot of education. So we're talking a lot about diet, exercise, how's your mental health? How are you sleeping? How's your family? How's your relationship? You know, what are you afraid of? What, like, you know, are you anxious about anything about the birth or postpartum? And so we're going all over all of this to, like, really, and again, ensure that your pregnancy stays low risk so that you can have a smooth birth process. I'm offering resources to have the most optimal, you know, safe birth at home. And so, yeah, I don't want an emergency to occur. Like, I don't wait for an emergency to occur at home. If there's any red flags that somebody should not be in my care, you know, we talk about that and I'm like, hey, here's what I'm seeing. And I think you should go for a second opinion. Or if it's during the birth itself, I'm like, okay, listen, like, here are these risk factors that I'm seeing. Like, I think we should transfer. And again, given that I, you know, generally have really close relationships and, you know, a good line of communication with my clients, when I say they should transfer, like, they trust that that is valid and that I'm not just, like, you know, shuffling them out the door, you know, quickly just because, you know, it's been too long or whatever. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And like, I understand that, like, sometimes, like, a negative reaction regarding home birth, it could just stem from, like, a lack of information, but, like, it is also very valid and understandable, like, that fear of something going wrong. But it seems like, I mean, you, like, depending on each scenario, you have, like, your set things that you're prepared to do yourself. And then you also, like, have to use your best judgment on when to transfer as well.
Right.
I do want to ask you one more question because I know we got to wrap up soon, but how many kids do you have? How many times have you given birth?
I have three.
So tell me, from someone that has done it, like, I want you to just tell me, like, your, like, very just purely emotional, like, nothing to do with your job. Like, what is that like to give birth at home?
It's great. It's like the highest high you'll ever experience. You know, it's like you really kind of have to hit this wall of, like, surrender in this way that you may never have had to work before. Like, I think that a lot of people think about birth as, like, a lot about the pain. And it's like, it's so much more than, like, physical pain. Like, emotionally and mentally is really, like, where birth is, like, a total mind fuck almost. It's just like, how can I possibly do this? And then your body does it. And it's just like the high that comes from that is, there's nothing like it. You know, I have so many clients that, you know, have given birth in the hospital and then given birth at home. Like, you know, given birth in the hospital, like your typical kind of epidural thing, you know, they learned more and they're like, I never want to do that again. And then they give birth at home and they're like, oh my gosh, that was the best thing that has ever happened. Like, I can't imagine doing it any other way. Like, I want 500 babies. I'd give birth any day. You know, for me, it was like, I never, luckily, like, you know, I chose home birth with my first, and I'm so glad that I did do that, because had I not, I likely would have had a really traumatic hospital birth situation. My first was like a large baby. He was a shoulder dystocia, and I've seen how they handle shoulder dystocia in the hospital, which is like when the shoulders get stuck and it's traumatic, you know. Like, I probably would have had a C-section. Like, you know, I pushed for a while. You know, typically in the hospital, they don't let you push for more than 3 hours, and I'm lucky that I, you know, had a great birth experience, and that's ultimately what led me on my path to become a midwife myself. But yeah, there's just truly, there's nothing like it. And yeah, I'm forever grateful for each birth experience, because it, you know, taught me new things about myself and about life. And yeah.
Oh, well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I really appreciate it. Thank you for carving out the time in your afternoon to sit down and chat with me. Thank you so much for your vulnerability, your honesty, and please tell everyone where they can find you in the world, on social media. Where can they find you?
Yeah, so I'm magpmidwifery.com is my website, and magpmidwifery or magpiemidwifery on Instagram.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I love this conversation.
Yeah, thank you.